do I feel fulfilled? And am I getting recognition?
Mm.
Am I getting significance?
Mm.
I think graph has evolved now, and I'm guilty of this myself. You know, people say, oh, I do graph for myself. So why do you post everything on your Instagram? Why don't you just keep your photos for yourself? Because there's a higher purpose that actually I've got a route, which is a natural human need that every person has. It's significance. We all want to feel significant in some way, do we not?
Yeah, for sure. Killer Keller Podcast. KellerKellerOfficial.com. You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Instagram UK Frontline.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we need to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Here we are in. We're live. Killer Keller Podcast. Welcome to the show once again. Come on. For those of you that do not know, I say this every single week. Big shout out to all the regulars. Big shout out to graffitikings.co.uk. Central London, as central as you need to be. And what a pleasure it is. If you haven't checked the Kellervision app, you're sorely missing out on your weekly dose of street culture and all that business. Picture on now. Welcome, man. To my right, your left, we have somebody, and somebody I might also add has been requested a bunch of times. So the fact that we made the connect, I'm super stoked.
Amazing.
OSA's finest. Yons is inside the place. How are you, my brother?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
We've had a bit of a chat, and what a fucking pleasure. Honestly, not only on time, like some of my more recent guests, which I'm really happy with, but fucking so articulate on it, you know what you're about, man, and that's a really important characteristic, isn't it?
I think that comes with a bit of old age, you know? You've got to learn who you are so you know what you can do in the world, right?
Yeah, that's true. And often people critique the show, which big up the regulars, because I know you are. I know it's not a personal critique, of course, but, you know, to get younger artists in, more active artists, and there's a lot of pluses, obviously, but then to have the experience of conversations and retrospect, I think that plays a lot into the hands of age and wisdom, right?
I think that's a natural thing. I think as you get a bit older, you start to look inside a bit more because you've been around on the planet for a while. And you've kind of got no choice but to look at yourself once everything else is exhausted.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think that everybody of that age does a bit of introspection, because I think it's a healthy thing. And I know we're going to touch on some of that today.
For sure. Retrospect. Exhausting, you're right, at 42, which I am, exhaustion does come, because the same problems in the world keep on cropping up and not a thing fucking changes. So you can only look at yourself, can't you? You can only really look at yourself and base your next movements on history of your own and what you can fix, because nothing else is actually being fixed anywhere else.
I think thinking about fixing things, you need to actually presuppose that things are broken to begin with, and the challenges that we face are a lot easier to overcome than the problems that you've labelled them as. So it all depends on what you're talking about with exhaustion. Is it the problems, or is it the constant striving to overcome the challenges?
Oh, good point.
But anyway, crack on.
Yeah, it was a deep one. See, we're going to get deep on this one. Yons, OSA, for those of you that have not been around these neck of the woods. I mean, I'm surprised we haven't crossed paths sooner, to be fair.
Yeah,
big up Gus. FKF all day.
Yeah, big up Gusto, man.
Big shout Learned, big shout Fraud. I mean, these are your hombres, man. This is an era.
I think it's a natural place to start the podcast today and talking about early influences and where the interest in graph actually sparked from.
For sure.
You know, for me, graffiti was something that was really quite interesting. I remember growing up as a kid and being taken on the train into central London by my granddad. And it was something I was always curious about. I was looking out of the window and I'd see all these tags on the side of the tracks. And I'd think, you know, how do they get there and do that? What is that about? And it was only later on, once I started secondary school, that those interests and kind of curiosities actually manifested into something that was paired up. You know, so when we think about, if we think about a bit before OSA, a bit before Learn, a bit before Fraud, a bit about the people that you know, that shaped who I am within that early graph identity that I have, which is probably very different to who I am now, and that's a natural thing.
Going back to the natural things,
I think the earliest people that I noticed was people like Acne, people like Drama, and it was only a short while ago that I finally met Acne. And it was like, oh, okay, yeah. What, is that you? Yeah. Do a tag. And I was like, oh my God, it is you. I remember being a little kid looking at his tags on the tracks and thinking, oh, okay, yeah. So that was a nice thing. It was almost coming full circle with that. The introduction that you're giving about OSA, about Learn, about Fraud, I'm just going to go into it and answer the question that you're going to ask. Is that cool, yeah?
Listen, you know what? We are going hammer and tongs, getting as much as we can out of this man right here, because he's only here once, one time only. We're winding up the machine and we're letting it roll.
Oh, look, he's already said I'm not coming back. Fuck you, I'm off, mate.
You ready? Should we get this going? Right, yeah, so go on. At the beginning, let's go.
So like I said, the earliest memories of graph was being on my granddad with the train, seeing tags like Acne, Drama, on that train into Waterloo when I was just getting taken into London. But how graph really came into, you know, my scope of what I could see in the world was, you know, for me, a bit about my childhood experiences. I grew up without a family. I was an adopted child. You know, my mother and father had some problems with drugs and I was taken off them at an early age.
Mm.
So what then happened was, you know, I was living with some, you know, my grandmother. She had parental custody of me for the early years. And the father figure that was brought into my life was my granddad. I went to a secondary school and, you know, in the first year I had it good. You know, I speak to a lot of people. You know, one of the things that I do within my working life at the moment is working with children who are subject to the care system.
Right.
So there's almost like a personal meaning and purpose within that. And we're going to talk about meaning and purpose as we get a bit more into the podcast. Mm-hmm. And we're going to relate mm-hmm. that to graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, you know, I was grade A student in the first year of school. I remember the English teacher used to leave the room and say, oh, can you do the spelling test for the year sevens? You know, I was a little boffin, as they would call it.
Mm.
But for me, I always had that academic ability, but I never felt like I really fitted in with the popular kids, the guys in the cage playing football, the cool kids that were good at sports. You know, if you're a senior,
I think we can all identify with that.
I mean, there's, if you were a senior at that age, I mean, boy, I've got a bit tubby since the lockdown, yeah? But
hey, listen, lockdown crew, you know how we do.
Hey, lockdown bellies, big up the lockdown bellies, yeah? But then you could do the polar opposite. There's certain people that have got the lockdown bods, you know, and they've been striving and they're looking crisp, but, you know, is that really important? That's something else we're going to touch on.
That's another. Whereabouts in growing up, where did you reside? Where was your home?
So, Southwest London. So, Southwest-y. You know, my roots, Battersea, Wandsworth, Tooting.
Mm.
And then with what happened to me with the shift in families, moving to a different family, I moved to kind of the edge of Wandsworth, without saying too much.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, anyway, how it all started, I was like, Fraud has been on here before.
Old type Fraud.
And there's someone who's associated with Fraud, and their name is Matta. And Matta was in my school. He was in my form group. And one day,
no
I was
way.
There, and I had the, whether it was fortune or misfortune, the perception I have of that, but sitting next to this Matta guy, and he was in my class, in my form group in school. And one day I'm sitting there and he's doing this sketch next to me and he's drawn like a train carriage.
That's bonkers.
Whether it's a tube or whether it's a train. Yeah. And he's done this mat outline on the side of it. And I said, oh, mate, what are you doing there? And he goes, oh, yeah, this is graph, mate. This is my tag. So I was hooked. I was like, oh, that's where the two things became connected. And I realised that, okay, that's that stuff I've been watching on the lines when my granddad takes me into the city.
And then all of a sudden it's like, cling.
Yeah, so this is at like, what, 13 years old, 14 years old? What? Year 8 is like 12, 13, I think.
You were super young.
Super young, yeah. So I took an interest in that. Now, for me, I don't know if other people that listen to the podcast can relate to this, but when you have reverse childhood experiences and you shape a model of the world about how the world should interact with you and how you should interact with the world, it was difficult for me to form friendships with the popular kids, the guys in the cage playing football and so on, because of the shit I was making up in my head about what people thought of me. But when I found Matta and the group of friends that he had and the guy that was associated with him, Fraud, it was like, okay, cool. These are a group of guys that just want to share their culture with me. Show me how it's done. You know, and they had this little crew called DU. And what was it even called? It was like Dirty Underwear or some madness. And then that was it for me. It was like, I like to think of myself as someone who's quite academic. I believe I can have a level of intelligence to get me through in the world. but school just wasn't for me, man. I weren't interested in it. But these guys were like, we got something better than school. Mm. Yeah, we're going out. Come sign in a form, and then we're going to go and get on the trains. And it was like, okay, well, then they were like, we're going to go Wimbledon and meet all these other writers because they meet there. Whoa. And we're tagging along with, you know, some of the writers that I aspired to. When we talk about early influences, it was, you know, people like Char, people like Vinos, people like Take. They were the ones that kind of we aspired to and looked up to, Zombie Zonk and so on.
I can totally see that. I can totally see that now when you say it, that those were influential. Because that was the era, wasn't it?
Well, that
totally
was the era. They were in the area. They were the people that...
Hold tight, all them, man, as well. Hold tight.
When we think about when we're introduced to a culture and people within the culture who have introduced us to it, who they look up to, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be looked up to because they're fucking kings. You know, I've heard many of them on the podcast, and these are the people that originated that London style and so on. So from then it was kind of game over, and I often reflect on, you know, if I never sat next to Matter in my form, how different would my life be and my views on the world?
How do you reckon it would be? You do think about it? How different would it be, do you think?
I don't know. I was academic or, you know, who knows? Who knows? But that introduced me to a whole heap of stuff that I think I would have been pushed away from and almost wrapped up in cotton wool, as the expression is. So from there, you know, it was like, you know, school wasn't interesting to me. I was more interested in bunking off. We'd be bunking the train and going to, I think it was Quicksave in Shepperton. Mm-hmm. One of the memories that come to me, the early memories of being a writer, was when Vauxhall first got done.
I find a picture of that funny memory from the early
big
days. Big up Sir, man. Sir put that whole thing together, man.
When I was getting into it, it was like, that was my introduction to the lifestyle, I suppose. And for me, it was like, okay, we all go to these shops, and I was introduced to this concept called brew raising. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's cool. For me, I was never a drinker as a child until that day. and we all went to Quicksave in Shepperton, and we were raising all these bottles of whiskies and that. And it was like, I didn't know what my tolerance was to alcohol. And I think it was like, we're going to go Shepperton, and that was the plan. We're going to bunk school. We're going to go in and we're going to sign in. We're going to bunk school. We're going to go to Vauxhall, look at all the graph that's been done. After we go to Shepperton, I raise loads of brews. And for me, I was back in this bottle of Bells. And one of my earliest memories of like, oh God, okay, at the time it was hellish, but I think that was my introduction to it. I must have been trying to back all this Bells whiskey on the way back to Vauxhall to see the graph. I think we got off, looked at it. I got as far as Wimbledon on the way back. And I was like, oh my God, I need to get off this train. Next thing, yeah, I'm down Wimbledon Alley. I'm on a staircase. And the last thing I remember is sitting on a fucking step, being sick everywhere. Next thing, I woke up in St. George's Hospital in my school uniform, sick all down me. And like the next morning, I was like, yeah, okay, that's cool, man. By the time, it was hellish. And then from then, it was, you know, introduced to people in the local area that were doing it. This was in the days when, you know, we had that legal wall down in New Malden, which was right next to the train tracks, called The Cut. Rest in peace, The Cut. The Cut was the wall. It was right next to the tracks. That was where I met, you know, there was that big surfing there. That's where I first met Char there. Mm-hmm. That's when, you know, early days when we were painting, that's where we'd go, look, Shine and Quest.
Yeah, hold tight, Shine and Quest.
So that's how it all kind of came about. And as I was growing up, that became my circle of friends, the people that did graffiti that were involved in that. And I think that's where it all started for me. And to answer the question, how would it have been different? Who knows, but I wouldn't change it.
Mm. There's a lot of people that say that. They wouldn't change it. They wouldn't change it.
I like who I am now, and I like some of the opinions and the views on the world. Having a critical eye on the status quo, I think, is very important, especially in the current climate that we've had over the last year and, you know, 2020 and 2021. I think it's really important to have a critical eye on not accepting the status quo.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? And, you know, like I said, we'd had a good chat beforehand, so we're jumping in like both feet on this one, as you can probably tell, because you know, we've cut the edges, we've got it gone in. There's a perspective, isn't there, a graph and the way you look at the world, isn't there? There is assimilation to that, isn't there?
Yeah, the key thing you've said there is the way you look at the world. So one thing that's really, really interesting is everyone's got their own view of how the world should be. You know, essentially, when we think about the world, you've got this objective reality where you've got things that are there in the physical world. You've got trees, you've got roads, you've got people, you've got the territory, essentially, that we navigate on. But every individual has a version of the territory, which is essentially a map in their brain, And that's made up of all the meanings that we make about this objective reality.
That's deep-rooted, isn't it? That's
subjective reality, yes. Maps of the world, yeah? So one thing that's interesting to take away from this for the audience, I think, is, you know, and this is outside of graph as well. This is, I think, as a life skill, recognising this as well, that not everybody thinks the same as you, okay? If something means something to you, it doesn't necessarily mean that everyone else thinks the same about that. Yeah. And I think about my own experience of that. You know, we've all got triggers in the sense of things that piss us off. Am I allowed to swear on it?
It's your podcast, my brother. Okay. Go, Gadget.
We've got things that piss us off, yeah? I think I've sworn a few times anyway. But that's because of the meaning we make about something. And all of the meanings we make about our experiences are just in our head. There's something we've made up.
That's learned behaviour, isn't it? That's stuff that you've kind of intrinsically, like, it's been, that's deep-rooted. It's inside you. That's morally right, that's morally wrong. I like that, you like it, but I don't. And that's where the conflict is, because it's so deep-rooted.
Well, let's break down this version of the map of the world. I hope the audience have got the concept of, you've got an objective reality and a subjective reality in your head. How the world should be, how people should behave, how people should treat me, you know, how I should interact, how I should be at a certain age, you know. And we can relate this to graph if we want, and I'm sure we will later on, you know, how a writer should be and, you know, how a street artist should be and so on. But should is probably the most dangerous word in the English language.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because we've all got shoulds, how things should be, you know.
Yeah, let's go.
And when other people don't meet our shoulds, we get pissed off.
Yeah.
So unless everybody in the world is going to behave how I expect them to, I'm not going to be happy.
What the fuck's up with that? Why is that?
Because we've got maps of the world. So one thing, you know, even write it down or something, you know, everyone's got a unique map of the world. So the meanings that you make out of an experience will not be the same as other people.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So how does graph affect the way we look at the world? I think we need to flip that on its side, first of all, and think about, how do our early childhood experiences influence the way that we enter graph and we look at the world in relation to, you know, how writers will approach graph? And, you know, there are stereotypes. I think one of the things we spoke about in advance of doing this was, you know, the kind of the stereotypes of a graffiti writer, the stereotypes of a street artist, and the shoulds that come with each of those. For example, you know, a graffiti writer should rack their paint. They should paint tubes, you know. They should do everything illegally. They should be a certain way. And the expectation that a graffiti writer then has of somebody else, you know, I'm stereotyping, I'm generalising here, and I apologise if this doesn't land right with everybody who's listening to it, because all I can make is generalisations from my map of the world.
For sure.
And hopefully, you know, that this lands well in your thought processes. But, you know, we've got this version of how things should be, and how does that kind of interact with it? I think we make decisions about, you know, some of us might be angry at the world from whatever happened to us when we were young before graph. One of the things that really stuck with me from a conversation I had with a lovely chap, and I know he's been on it before, Tizer, is he said, you know, well, most graffiti writers come from a place of pain.
I
can't say that's for everyone, but I think of all of the people that I grew up with and the people that I still speak to now and the people that have come back to graph recently, they've had some adversity. And I think there's something about finding well-being in graph. And that's something I want to kind of get across today, because graph is actually good for us.
Yeah.
But the way we view the world, and I think if we look at the stereotypes of a graffiti writer being a nonconformist, somebody who sticks two fingers up to authority, somebody who does what they want, you know, that comes from possibly, you know, one version of it, and I can only relate this to my own experiences, is being angry at the world for what the world has done to me, quote unquote. So, you know, that carries through in life. I think, you know, that might affect how you behave in the workplace. It might affect how you behave
online.
It might affect how you behave in a global pandemic, you know, whether you want to follow the restrictions or not.
Yeah.
You know, there's this sense of what happens to you early on may influence what your values are, what's important to you, how you meet your needs.
Where your moral compass is.
Your moral compass, exactly. So, you know, the question was, you know, how does graph affect the way you look at the world, was it?
Yeah.
So I flipped it first of all, and it was like, well, how does your original model of the world and the way that your version of how things should be is shaped in childhood, how does that influence your attraction towards graffiti? And I know we're going to touch on this later on, because, you know, I think there's something deeper about the question, why do people paint? Why do people do graffiti? I know people on previous podcasts have spoke about it's a release. People talk about it's an addiction, I can't stop doing it. So there's some stuff I want to talk about a bit later on around
for
that.
For sure.
But how does it affect the way you look at the world? It's different for every person, so that's a difficult question to answer. But I think the more useful question to consider is, how does the way you've decided the world should be and you should be and you should act on what the world owes you or doesn't owe you influences your motivation to go and do graffiti? And whether that's illegal or legal, you know, I think there's an emerging paradigm now where graffiti is starting to shift from the stereotypes of writers and artists and so on, and it's becoming more liberal, you know, and everybody's
liberal.
Getting involved.
Yeah. How influential is the people that you're around and the scenarios you get yourself in that kind of legitimizes your way of thinking?
Try to pick out the question in that. So I think the question you're asking...
Because we were talking about the way we look at the world, and the way I'm thinking of it is a lot of it is peer pressure. You have these basic reference points that as an artist and as a young person you kind of go with. Like, you want to be original, you want to be stylistic, you want to stick out, you have your own agendas, you have your own things that you want to achieve out of that. But then you have the rule book, which is...
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay, so. What I think we're talking about here is the things you want to achieve. I mean, I could sit here probably now and I'm going to put you on the spot, and even where you're at now, you know, you've established yourself as a beatbox artist, you're doing your thing with your podcasts. Mm. I would ask you to name three things, even at the age you're at, if you could just give me three things right now that you want in life.
I want legacy.
Mm.
I want creative freedom.
Mm.
And I want... And third one.
See, we're flipping it. We're going to interview Keller now. I'm going to flip it on him.
Sustainability.
Sustainability. Mm. So it was creative freedom, legacy, and sustainability. Mm. Yeah? Mm. So those things are things that you want. Mm.
Mm.
Now, he's answered the question very well, because I think he's already gone to a higher level with his answers. But a lot of the things we pursue that we believe we want, we don't really want as human beings, okay? Now, again, I alluded to earlier that some of the work I've done in the past is with younger people, and I see my role working with the youngsters is about helping them to truly understand what's driving their motivations, because we only really act on what we're conscious of that is what we believe to be available to us, because we've all got these needs that we have to meet.
Yeah.
Every human being has the same set of needs that we need to meet,
okay?
But what's different is when we go back to when we spoke about everybody's got a unique map of the world.
Mm.
Within that map of the world, there are roads, which are our beliefs of how we're going to get what we think we want. But the interesting thing is, we actually don't want what we think we want.
You get there and all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, actually, I've got this now.
Well, no, there's something above it, because there's always a higher purpose sponsoring what you think you want. Now, when I ask the young people the question about, you know, what do you want? I get, you know, you can guess the kind of answers you get. I want money, I want a car, I want a nice wife, I want a house.
Mm.
But the next question you've got to ask yourself, and I invite the audience to actually think about the things that they pursue in their life and what do they want. And, you know, if we're delivering this in the right way, you should really be asking yourself that question in your head.
Mm.
What are the three things that you want in life? But really, there's something above that that's sponsoring it. And I think the level of awareness of understanding what's sponsoring your desires, yeah, is the question to uncover that is, well, what would that give you? So if you had a legacy, what would that give you, Keller?
It would give me an anchor point that says that's an achievement.
And if you had an achievement, what would that mean?
Well, to have an achievement is what you wake up in the morning for, isn't it? Like, to wake up and... You know, you're talking to a guy that's got zero responsibilities other than this. You know what I mean? Like, no kids, no car, no house. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, so my end goal are those kind of three things, you know?
Mm-hmm. Are they, though? Are they the three things?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want kids or nothing like that.
Okay. So creative freedom, what would that give you?
Creative freedom?
Mm.
But, you know, it's deeper than that, isn't it? Because, and we alluded to this in a conversation earlier, is... Creative freedom actually comes from within. It's like all of this here is equivocal of what the 10,000 hours effect. I mean, when I was trying to figure out the sound, like I did mention, I was like, this isn't my fucking world, man. What the fuck? All I want to do is grab the mic and beatbox, you know, because that's the reset button right there of like, okay, this is not the thing that I signed up for fucking 20 years ago, but it's the achievement. That's the achievement. It's the knowing that I did that. I did the camera. I did the lights. And that's my creative outlet. So the creativity is within that, but you've got to kind of create those situations yourself.
Mm. And if you knew that you did all that, how would you feel?
Oh, I feel great now. Yeah. Even now, the fact that we're having a conversation, I'm already feel like we've won.
Okay.
The creativity and the desire, the output is already there.
Okay.
That's the best feeling.
So I think that the what the point I'm trying to get across here is...
Am I adding value to your
you
point?
Are, yeah, you are, you are, you are, you are, you are. He's the one getting insecure about the questions yeah, now. Before this, I was like, does that make sense? What I want to talk about. So I think, you know, if we relate this back to graph, you know, we've all got these versions of what we think we want, but it takes a deep introspection to look at, which is what we spoke about at the start, to actually look at, well, what do I really get from that? You know, do I feel fulfilled? And am I getting recognition?
Mm.
Am I getting significance?
Mm.
I think graph has evolved now, and I'm guilty of this myself. You know, people say, oh, I do graph for myself. So why do you post everything on your Instagram? Why don't you just keep your photos for yourself? Because there's a higher purpose that actually I've got a route, which is a natural human need that every person has. It's significance. We all want to feel significant in some way, do we not?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So graph was my way of actually feeling significant. I was no good at football. Yeah, we used to have to do this fucking PE thing. We used to have to run around the block. And boy, I fucking hell, I couldn't run, mate. I was a fat kid with glasses. I'd sweat out after 5 minutes of running, like, you know, and that weren't for me. So I was never had that. How do I feel significant in this? But when I discovered graffiti and, you know, I started to get a little bit better and, you know, I was getting my ego stroked at times saying, oh, that's sick. That's good. That hand style's good. And for me, it was like, okay, I'm getting recognition. So there was a need that was being met by this. So the point I'm trying to get across is every human being has the same set of needs that they're trying to meet. Yeah, and that might be fulfillment, significance. You've got that fella, you know, the personal development guru, quote unquote, Tony Robbins. He talks about six human needs. You know, everyone's got a need for significance. Everyone's got a need for feeling certain about something. Everyone needs some variety in their life. Everyone needs love and connection.
Mm.
Everyone needs to grow. Mm. And everyone needs to contribute. Yeah. Mm. But what makes individuals different is the map of the world that they have. I hope this is making sense, yeah? Because that is the root to what they believe is available to meet their needs. And then we take this a little bit deeper and we look at, you know, class structures, because within a class structure...
Hold on 1 second.
Go on.
So, meeting their needs. You were talking about at school running and how...
Yeah,
how
fuck it over.
Tough was that, yeah.
Pick up Mr. Bell.
Yeah.
And anyone remembers Mr. Bell who's watching this? It was in my school. Yeah, yeah.
And hold tight anybody that did that cross-country running and can still hold their legs together without any discomfort in their knees, because I'll tell you what, those were no jokes back then. But ironically, graph as a vehicle, and this again is just going by the 270 fucking podcasts I've done, the fact that you have this vehicle of graph, and then you innocently get involved in the creative side of it, the stylistic, the sketchbook to wall to whatever surface. And then you start by, without even knowing it, you have to learn to run. You've got to learn to climb. You've got to learn to do all those things. So you've got to be incentivized. Because you can't just say, oh, go and run that for me. No, I'm not fucking running. Fuck off. But then when you've got a vehicle and a reason to, it's like all of a sudden that thing becomes more precious to you than anything, and you'll run fucking leaps and bounds. That's the thing about graph writers that I find the most interesting of all. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? The total belief system and the way that everything else, the raising the bruise, that all these other kind of, you know, footnotes in what means to be a graph writer, the lifestyle things, but also the other things that would actually, in fact, deem them as lazy, but actually they're not, because they're putting more emphasis on that one thing, on graph, than anybody does within a marketing sector. Anyone does within the fucking sports sector.
It's quite addictive, isn't it?
Yeah. It's bonkers, but it's fucking great. And it's just, it challenges me every time.
I think, you know, one thing that's been really quite revolutionary about the understanding of human behaviour over the past few years is this concept of well-being. Now, human behaviour is based on two principles. Everything we do is either going to move us away from feeling pain or move us towards feeling pleasure. Generally, people will do more to move themselves away from pain or what they believe will be painful, which is the distinction that makes all the difference. You know, when we think about, you know, everybody's got a friend who stayed in a relationship too long because they were scared of the pain of breaking up and maybe being alone, and now they had this belief that being alone was bad. Or, you know, so human beings will generally do everything they can to move away from pain before they can move towards pleasure. Yeah. The motivation for all human behavior is based on two principles. You know, so if we look at this in layers, okay? So the top layer, you've got pain and you've got pleasure, okay? All your behavior is geared towards moving away from the pain and moving towards pleasure. But underneath that, you've got the map. You've got the blueprint of what you believe will give you the pleasure or move you away from the pain, okay? So then at some level in your thinking that most of the time we're not even aware of, this happens unconsciously, is we recognize and we learn, and this is why Graf is great, okay? Because Graf covers so much of this. And over the last years, the study of kind of psychology and so on, for anybody that already knows this, you know, I invite you as you listen to this to look at this as an opportunity to kind of build on your existing knowledge. But also, if this is a new concept, you know, just take this on. But psychology generally historically has been about a medical model. And what I mean by a medical model, it's about fixing deficits. Now, I apologise to anyone who's listening to this that has to go and see a psychologist, but traditional psychology has been about fixing what's broken. Since 1998, there's been a real movement to something called positive psychology, and that's a study of happiness and well-being. Now, in 1998, there was a guy called Martin Seligman, and Martin Seligman became the president of the American Psychological Association, and that gave him the platform that he needed to actually push this movement of positive psychology. Now, the great thing I love about it is it's for everyone. You don't need to have something that's quote-unquote broken to benefit from it. It's the goal of positive psychology is making a happy and successful and fulfilled world. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is because he's created a model, and a lot of the thinking I've done around graffiti and what I get from graffiti as an individual, and maybe as you listen to this, anybody who's involved in graffiti or whatever it is you're involved in that you seem to be addicted to, something that you keep coming back to, okay, maybe this will give you a framework to just explore your thinking around it. So the model that this Martin Seligman came up with is basically the recipe for good well-being. Now, remember what I told you, all behavior is trying to move us towards pleasure or move us away from pain. The PERMA model is the recipe for moving towards pleasure. So if we break it down letter by letter, okay?
PERMA, yeah, break down the PERMA. What does PERMA stand PERMA, for?
The P, okay, in PERMA, the first part, of the first ingredient of feeling good is positive emotions, experiencing positive emotions. And you might say, oh, come on, that's straightforward. I know that, that's obvious. You know, I feel happy all the time or I enjoy that. You know, but then there's kind of real, true happiness and there's short-term satisfaction. But positive emotions are things like pride. And if we relate this to Graf, you know, what's it like when you do a burner and you stand back and you think, I'm proud of that, you know? So pride, joy, feeling of belonging, you know, connection, all of those things that make you feel good inside. Positive emotions, that's the first part of the recipe for good well-being. The second part of the recipe, and we can break this down a bit further if you want to.
Yes, please.
Is something called engagement. So you've got P, positive emotions. If you want to feel really good and have a, you know, because the quality of your life is not about your circumstances, okay? You know, when we look at people that live in poverty, there are parts of the world that people have nothing and they're super happy, man.
Yeah, that's right.
Super, super happy because they don't concentrate on their circumstances and their shoulds of how things should be, you know? They're grateful for what they have, okay? And in some shape or another, they're following this PERMA model.
Okay.
So the E is about your strengths, yeah? Engagement. That's what the E stands for, engagement. And what that means is using your strengths to do something that you see as meaningful. Now, if anybody's actually interested and they want to find out a bit more about their strengths and what their strengths are, because, you know, your well-being is a lot more in control than you think it is, okay? There are things that you can voluntarily do to improve your well-being and ignore circumstance. And we've all got a hierarchy of character strengths. You know, some of my top five are hope, you know, creativity, which completely ties in with graph,
mm-hmm.
Genuineness and honesty, self-regulation, but I don't think that's so much anymore of mine, you know. I think I've got a bit lazy in old age, or maybe I'm just doing what I enjoy. So having these strengths and using them in a meaningful way. So for me, you know, if I'm using my strength for creativity and hope for the future, doing things like this, trying to put a message out there, you know, that's contributing to my good well-being. So it's engagement. So if anyone's interested, you can actually do a free survey. It takes 15 minutes. Just Google VIA character strengths, and there's a free survey you can take, and you'll uncover what your top five are. And it's really interesting just to have a look at that and see if they resonate.
We'll put it in the status.
Get it up on them graphics when you get the graphics up on the screen or something.
Right there, Kels.
VIA, you can pay me later.
So positive energy.
Positive engagement.
Engagement. Right,
now the third thing is relationships.
Relationships.
We're the most social creatures on the planet.
Right.
Yeah?
That's why we're here.
We are. We're the most social creatures on the planet. Okay. We need to thrive. We can't be isolated and experience really good well-being. Now, relationships is something that's really interesting, and you know, I had a lot of time away from graffiti, and I've come back to it through, you know, some adversity that I experienced over the last kind of 18 months, and there's been good things in that time, but there's been adversity, and that kind of brought me back to it. And it's only on reflection in actually preparing for the talk that we're having today that I've realized the things that I get from graffiti and how this is giving me good well-being. You know, I got put on medication by the doctor. I went to therapy. The NHS therapy was crap. You know, who is it? Jack Jetson, Strange Ways, when he talks about a psychiatrist can't help me in that lyric, yeah? I'm like, yeah, that's me, bro. No psychiatrist can help me. They're not fixing my problem. So I went to the private therapist and, you know, I did all of that. But then I realised, actually, do you know what? If I just go and do what I enjoy and practice what I preach, you know, and some of the people that I've met on my return to graph, some old faces and some very new faces, you know, big up Blob, big up Minor, big up NST, big up all them boys, old, you know, they're people that have been there for me through times of adversity. And there's people that I grew up with, yeah, that know what I've been going through. Where the fuck are they?
And if
they're watching this, they probably won't be watching this because they're not a part of that culture that I've returned to. But relationships, people being there for you, being like you've got a sense of belonging, you know, that's really good for us. So having positive relationships is the third ingredient of feeling good, okay? So you've got the positive emotions. Now, let's relate this completely to graph. Positive emotions, when you do graph, you do something good, you feel proud of it, you feel joy, you're having a good time. Engagement, you're using your strengths, yeah, to deliver something, to come up with an outcome, a product, whether that's a piece, whether you're sticker bombing, whether you want to bomb the city and be all city, whether you want to go and paint tubes, whatever that is, you're using your strengths to achieve that, and you're having relationships with your crew at the time, or friends, or people that you're doing it with. The fourth element of PERMA, the fourth ingredient of feeling good, is M, and that's meaning and purpose. There is no point in living on this world unless you believe you've got a reason to get out of bed every morning. That's why people get depressed. You know, people ain't got a reason to get out of bed in the morning.
1,000%.
Yeah, what are you going to do in life? Yeah? So meaning and purpose. Now, you know, graph, there's always something to do. The job's never over.
Yeah,
the job's never over. Whether you're following your shoulds, and whether you're like, I've got to paint every tube yard in the city, or I've got to get stickers everywhere, I've got to tag everything, or if you just want to go and paint it legal every day and just keep that alive and just enjoy yourself, which I think is the most important thing, enjoying yourself. And we'll talk a bit about that later on. So having a sense of meaning and purpose. Now, that is something bigger than yourself in the theory, okay? It's about, you know, people might find meaning and purpose in other things, being a parent, okay? It might be being a part of a religion. Come on, mate, you know, when we're filming this now, we've just had the Euros, and, you know, that brought the country together with everything that's happened over the last year, with the polarization of race and gender and the trans movement and all of that. There's been a lot of divisive stuff, you know, Trump. You know, look at the divisiveness that we've experienced over the last year. But that meaning and purpose around, okay, I'm going to support England, I'm going to be there on that night. Yeah, you know, fair enough, the result weren't the result that we were looking for. But having a sense of belonging to something that's contributing to something that's bigger than yourself is good for us. Okay, that's the fourth element. A, what do you think the A stands for? It's accomplishment. Now, come on, think about graph. Graph's about accomplishment, whatever your goals are within that. Whether it's about doing a burner, whether it's about, again, I'm repeating myself, doing all the yards, whether it's about getting up, you know, whether it's, whatever it is. If you feel like you're accomplishing something, that's when we truly feel alive. Because you alluded earlier, Keller, to something about, you know, when you reach your goal and it's like, well, what do I do now? Is that it? you know, then the advice I'd give to someone is, you know, think about what else you want to achieve and what else you want to manifest and what else you want to create in your life.
Mm.
Because it's not the destination that makes us happy.
It's the journey, the feeling of the journey. All the time.
You know,
bro.
I think even this in the pursuit of relationships and love, you know, I can only speak for myself in this one, but don't you enjoy the chase?
Yeah, the chase is chase is better than the catch.
Because you feel like the progress, yeah? So when we think about, you know, what does graph actually give us and why do people become addicted to it, you know, it's because we've codified it as all of these different elements of what is actually, you know, now empirically evidenced by positive psychology. And when I say empirically evidenced, what that means is this guy Martin Seligman that I spoke about earlier has done huge studies. Mm. He's had samples of like the whole US Army, you know, so many schools in America. You know, he's had huge samples to actually test this stuff and empirically research it to prove it works. Yeah? So he comes up with interventions and things. So, you know, I can sit here confidently and 100% say what I'm talking about works.
Mm.
You know, if you think about, even if you're not a writer, even if you're an artist, even if, you know, you're a rapper, a beatboxer, a DJ, a skateboarder, you know, think about how you can find perma in your life. You know, how can you increase your positive emotions? How can you use your strengths to do something meaningful? Look at your relationships. Are they good? Do they make you feel good? Mm. Do people, are they there when they need someone to link, or are they there for you when you need them?
Yeah.
You know, what's your reason for getting out of bed every day? If you haven't got one, find one. What are you accomplishing? What's your journey? Set goals, man. Set goals. And it don't matter what those goals are. Be aware it's not society's goals for you that you should have this by this age and you should, you know, have this job and be earning this much money and have this many kids and have a house with this many bedrooms. What's important to you? What is important to you? What are your values? And tie your accomplishment to that. And if you just consciously think about that, whether it's graph, whether it's hip-hop, whatever it is, you know, I can confidently say you're going to feel better after actually doing stuff towards that. That was a really long answer. I hope that makes sense, man.
Fucking sick. Next week on the podcast, that was fucking sick. Right, okay. Let's reset. So cool. with regards to everything you've just said there and the mission brief, the perma, the end goal, the achievement, you as Jon's OSA, what was your goal? We began the subject of...
Good question.
You know what I mean? Like, so where... Because, you know, we talked about your childhood, we talked about OSA forming and matter and fraud and learned, hold tight, good peoples, and furthermore, your attraction to graph and what was the trigger. Explain from there the journey on and how, what did you base your achievements on? Yeah.
What did I base my achievements on? So what was the goal? There's a few questions within that. I'm going to try and answer the question of, well, when you were speaking, the first thing I was thinking about was my goals changed over time. You know, when we're thinking about...
Only as a kid, as somebody a kid, coming in.
When I first got into it, when I was 13 years old, I think I was unaware of my goals. I think they were unconscious. There's a lot we do within our behaviour that we don't even... I mean, think about your heart, for instance. Your heart beats hundreds of thousands times a week, a day, or whatever. I don't know the number off the top of my head. I'm not going to state it in case I get it wrong. But an amount of times that is unbelievable. Now, we don't consciously have to wake up every day and say, right, I need to, you know, like, I can consciously wiggle my finger now, yeah? I'm consciously telling myself to do that.
Mm.
But every day I don't consciously tell myself to make my heart beat.
Mm.
So we have a level of awareness that we're not aware of that's happening at an unconscious level.
Mm.
And again, it's based on these needs that we have. It's only when we often reflect in hindsight and ask ourselves, well, what did I get from that really? Having a bit of an understanding about what human needs are and what we really want from life. So in answer to the question, the early goals were, I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to have friends. You know, as a child, I was left for long periods of time. I had attachment issues with forming friendships. And some of that stuff still manifests in adult life. Then that maybe even be related to some of the adversity I've experienced over the last year and, you know, the last 18 months. So I think the first goals were about just, you know, my version of being in some sort of popular group and having something to do.
Tribal.
Yeah, and there was a sense of belonging. It was like, okay, the you know, in hindsight, there were some things in the early days, and I think people sort of fucking piss in hindsight. I think, well, you're like, that was very nice what you did then.
Do you have those moments where you think to yourself, oh shit, did I take the piss? I took the piss. Shit.
I don't think I've ever taken a piss out of anyone. I think I'm a nice guy.
No, not know? Like that. I mean, like for instance, you went a step beyond the boundaries of graph and the unwritten rules, and you...
Well, it was significance. I think, you know, whether I was aware of it or not, at first it was probably a hobby and it was an interest and something to spark curiosity. And I think once you start getting those, what are they called? Strokes, essentially. You know, whether it's ego strokes or whatever. Mm. I think there's a guy, who does the ego stays? Eric Byrne. Eric Byrne, in his book, it's worth reading, looking up if people are into that. But, you know, we get strokes, and what that means is essentially things that will contribute to how we feel about ourselves.
Mm.
So if someone says, oh, that's a sick hand style, or I like what you did there, or oh, you smashed it, you nicked so many hammerites from that P&Q. it's like, do you know what I mean? There's this element of, okay, yeah, maybe I've got some value and some worth within this circle and this tribe.
Mm.
So I think the early motivation was around that, and then the hype and the, not stigma, the hype and the aura around some of the big names that were presented when I first got into it, you wanted to be them, didn't you? You wanted people to... So it's recognition, isn't it? There was an unconscious level of recognition, and I think it does boil back down to significance.
Mm.
I think that's a big driver for me. Now, when I speak about needs, people have different needs that they're driven in different directions.
Mm.
Growing up, I think feeling like having a belief that substances were more important than myself as a child to my parents, I had a need that I was lacking for significance. I didn't feel important to people, so I needed to find that elsewhere. Unconsciously, my brain then recognised that, well, look, these people are giving you strokes, as Eric Byrne calls them. And it's like I learned that, shit, if I do this, I can feel belonging. I'm a part of these people. I can feel significant. I could feel like I'm worth something.
Mm.
So I think that was early motivation. But as I've got older and I've learned a bit more about myself, I think my goals for it have changed. Now it's about enjoying myself. You know, I've let go of, you know, how I should be as a graffiti writer. You know, whatever I allegedly did in the past is irrelevant for this podcast. But now I don't need to think about painting trains. I don't need to think about bombing the city. If I go out and I enjoy myself, that's the most important thing, because, you know, time is the only thing on the planet that, you know, for me, when I think about my life, I've lost girlfriends, I've lost a house, I nearly lost my daughter, I've lost friends, you know, I've lost parents, I've lost family, I've lost a ton of mobile phones, I've lost clothes, I've lost money. A lot of those things that I've lost, I can either replace or get back. But the one thing that I invite you to think about as you're listening to this, that you're never ever going to get back, is the time you spend. And there's going to be a time when you're going to be sitting in a bed one day,
thinking about what you've
done. It might be in a care home, it might be in a nice house, your retirement home, you know, whatever that is to you, whatever that looks like, but you're going to have some version of sitting there and reflecting on your life. And you might have a massive family, you might have 20 kids, you know, but the reality of it is, it's likely they're not going to come and see you every day. And you're going to be sitting there thinking about, you know, asking yourself the question, how did I spend my time?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're going to feel pretty fucking shit if you realize, shit, I spent my time comparing myself to others. I spent my time worrying about things, about how I should be and how others perceived me.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can sit there on my deathbed and think, do you know what? Fuck it. I did everything I enjoyed. I enjoyed myself every day. Yeah. Then that's fulfillment. I think then it's a life well spent.
Mm.
You know, life is about enjoyment, you know. So now my goals are around graph. I know it's something I enjoy doing. I get to use my strengths, creativity, and so on. I like the people I'm around doing it. So as long as I enjoy it now, that's the goal. And the biggest thing I've had to let go of to get to that point is, you know, there was a question of who am I to come back to graph, you know? Or, you know, allegedly, you know, in the past, doing things that, you know, a writer should do and so on. But that's not important anymore. What's important is actually just enjoying the time you have. And what a nice little anecdotal thing I do around this is, whenever I meet a writer and I see them painting, they probably get pissed off of it because I see them stand back, you know, they look at their work, I'm there next to them, saying, oh, are you happy with it? 99% people say, nah, I'm not happy with it.
Why is that?
We focus on what's wrong. But why is that? I think we're naturally wired to protect ourselves.
Mm.
Yeah? So when we think about the human brain, it's, you know, 200 million years old and it's evolved over time. So we are wired for survival. We are wired to protect ourselves and our loved ones.
Mm.
But the thing is, you know, in London, when was the last time you see a tiger walking down the road? When was the last time you see, I don't know, a fucking dinosaur? Or, you know, where are these real life problems that we need to be protected from? So because our brains evolved to protect ourselves, we're constantly looking for other things that we need to be protected from, like people's opinions or what people might think of my piece.
Which actually is none of our business. People's opinions are none of our business.
But because we're automatically wired for survival, that's the first thing we look for. What's wrong?
Always, yeah.
And if I can fix what's wrong or what I might be criticised for, yeah, I can protect myself.
Yeah.
So the invitation is actually look at what's right. Mm. Look at what you've done well, you know. Mm. You know.
Some would argue, especially if you were sitting on your deathbed, dying and nothing, in a home or people's home for yons and, you know, OSA, the accomplishments are pretty clear. Do you know what I mean? In terms of body of work and accomplishments in graph and the crew and a solidified unit that took place of an era. Do you know what I mean? Like, I certainly can't see anything wrong in that.
Again, it's subjective. Again, isn't it? Some people might be watching this thinking, oh, OSA didn't do shit that we did. Other people might be thinking, oh, OSA are the bollocks.
Mm.
But that's none of that's important. We enjoyed ourselves. We had a fucking ball. I had some of the greatest times of my life with some great people, you know, and even coming back to it now, you know, I don't adhere to crews anymore. You know, I've got something quite controversial about wanting to be in the crew and so on. Again, there's something about let go of your ego and just enjoy yourself.
Mm.
If I'm with certain people and I'm in their crew, I'll put it up. But that's not important because you don't need to put two or three letters next to your name to validate yourself and who you are. I'm going to say that again. You don't need to put two or three letters next to your tag to validate who you are, because you're enough.
Oh God.
As long as you're happy and you enjoy yourself.
Someone get a bucket of water. It's hot in here. Jesus Christ.
It's fucking hot in here. If anyone's been here, all these fucking lights, mate.
Yeah, man. The electric bill is a nightmare. Yeah. To have you go come back in and check the Instagram page, man, fucking fire. It's like next day. But you're saying that coming in with a different mindset and moving on from that, do you feel that's a reset? Does it have to be a reset? Is there anything from the back end of like what happened back then? I'm confused where that comes from, because I understand that there's a different mindset and that you're treating graph with the personal... it's a personal thing for you, and I get that.
But if I'm brutally honest, there's still elements of ego that come through that.
Mm.
You know, why do I have an Instagram page? I could just keep photos on my phone, or I could keep photos in an album.
Mm.
You know, if I'm brutally honest with myself, of course there's an element of that.
But we don't want to have to, a lot of people, our egos don't want us to have to ask that question. Do we? We don't want to have to kind of justify the reasons for things that everyone else is falling in line and doing, because if they're doing it, then why can't I do it? And is that an ego thing? I mean, probably, but I don't have to answer to that, do I? You know what I mean? It's a real ego is super complex, isn't it?
It is. But again, it's one of our drives.
Mm.
Significance.
Mm.
It's the way we worked out. And, you know, it is a nice thing to have positive feedback about what you do. Well, it depends on who you are. Some people, you know, you've got people that are internally referenced and they know when they've done a good job, but other people need to hear feedback from others, you know. And it's important, you know, even understanding that about your friends or your colleagues or teams that you manage, you know, or whatever it is, understanding how people recognise when they've done a good job. Sometimes you don't need to tell them, but certain people will need it. You know, maybe there's certain people you can think of, any of the audience listen to. If you paint with them, they're like, oh, what do you think of that? What do you think of this? Can you give me feedback on this? You know, when you're thinking it's fine, bruv, like, chill.
I don't think for a second, like, someone like Doctor or Force or Koza. I don't feel for a second like any of these guys need validating. I feel like their just work rate is through the roof and they're just going for it. Do you know what I mean? There's all these anomalies.
I would like to think and I can't speak for other people, and I'm speaking from my map of the world here, I would like to think that some of the people that have been around for a long time and are established, I think they had those initial drives that I described.
Mm.
I'd like to think they do it for the enjoyment now. Mm. And if, you know, I'd like to think everybody just at least has a moment to think about, am I doing what I enjoy? Because that time's going to come, mate. You're going to sit on that deathbed.
Mm.
And my intention and my gift to you, if I could give you one, was to be able to sit there and say, do you know what? I had a fucking ball.
Mm.
And die with a smile on your face.
Bro, that is super important that you bring this up. Beatboxing to me now is a hell of a lot different compared to what it was when I was initially starting.
Mm.
The athleticism was just powerful. I was just going for it, out the traps running, and you know what I mean, and throwing the red turtle shells behind me as I'm going. Do you know what I mean? You get what I'm saying?
I like the Mario Kart ad lib.
Yeah, man. But like, as you grow up, there's a humanity and a humility to what you deem as success, and
okay,
do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. Success is an interesting word, isn't it?
Mm.
We spoke a little bit before about this. Words are interesting because success, when I say success and I ask the question, what does success mean to you as an audience listening to this, you've all got a different version of it.
Mm.
So there are certain words that means something different to everybody. But the trick is understanding that and recognizing that what is successful to me may not be successful to someone else. So for anyone's interested in the theory behind this in language and linguistics, words that describe a thing that do not have a physical presence, so words that describe a thing like a friendship, a relationship, a writer, you know, or a piece, okay, peace is slightly different. It does have a physical presence. But things that describe a thing but don't have, you know, you can't physically pick it up and put it in a wheelbarrow, essentially.
Like love.
Love, yeah. Mm. It means something different to each person. So recognizing that those words are called nominalizations and they have a deep structure within everybody for what that actually means to them. I think that's an important thing.
Wow, yeah. And tough. That,
you know, so... And, you know, just on a side note, moving away from graph, recognizing that in your careers and the way you navigate relationships and friendships and the way you can influence people is recognizing that the words you use will land differently in their brains to how you perceive them to land is going to be your key to flexibility and communication with people.
Oh, do you have a roadmap for that? That allows you, you know... You're not going to please everyone all the time. That's just a fact. And like you say, everyone's got their own different perceptions of what success is, what skill is, what, you know.
Your map of the world isn't the right map of the world. That's what I'm going to say. I'm not directing that at you. I'm directing it.
People in general.
Everyone's map of the world is different, and it doesn't mean yours is right, theirs is wrong. But the question you asked was, do you have a roadmap to navigate that?
Just
have respect for other people's maps. Be curious.
Yeah.
You know, the only way you're really going to build rapport with someone is to get really curious about their map of the world.
And remember, interested people are interesting. Don't be boring.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? You've got to be interested to be interesting. That's a fucking... It's true. And sometimes you can really push for someone's... Sometimes you can enforce your own opinion on a situation to test the waters to see if you're kind of matched. But actually, the trick is not to be matched and not to try and manipulate people into thinking a certain way just because you feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's dictatorship, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Match is an interesting word.
Mm.
But what was the question you're asking there? Let me just try and...
I'm kind of musing a bit more now, but yeah.
Okay.
It just feels like sometimes...
I think respect people's map is the message we're trying to get across here. And when we relate this to the shift in paradigms in the world of graffiti right now is, you know, graffiti's become very accessible to people from lots of different class structures and so on.
Yeah.
The other day I was at a wall and I was there early in the morning and I was just having a little stroll around and a look around and I saw a very young child painting the wall with some spray cans and it was a Max piece he'd done.
Nice.
And he was with his mum. His mum was quite middle-aged. The assumptions I made about her appearance was she was quite middle-class, you know, because the first thing that come into my head from my map of the world, because of my experiences and so on, the meaning I made about that situation was she must be an old-school writer or connected to the scene in some way. Mm. when I kind of observed her and I spoke to them, I thought, well, maybe she's not. You know, maybe she's, there's nothing telling me that my assumption is correct, you know, when I tested that. And I think that shift in that now, you know, later on in the same day, I saw another couple with their kid doing exactly the same thing. And I thought, do you know what? Like, that didn't happen when we were that age, you know. Nobody took me to a wall at 10 years old and said, yeah, go on, mate, have a go at doing the piece and doing your name. So I've lost my train of thought.
I would like to just interject and,
go on,
and
go on.
Add value to what you're saying. Because it's something that was brought up on the Panic podcast, Hold Tight Panic. There's a change of... and whether this goes down well or not, comments below, please. There is a change in public opinion. I don't think it's the whole nine yards, because I still think there is a lot of underpinning reasons why graph will never be accepted in its entirety. And there is also fractions in graph that will never cease to let up on attack in the way that we conventionally know graph to be. But there is a public change in, and I think it's generational. I think over the years, people have become so accustomed to graph and its patterns. And there's a technological difference in the way we consume graph, and we buy paint and we buy caps, and it's almost like, oh, you can buy the things now, you know. So having young people who have these kids, they are so used to seeing graph in the hardcore, in the street art, in on the trains, it's almost like become this, almost like culturally appropriate kind of way.
Yes. I'm just, let me gather my thoughts on this before I'll steam into something. I think it's become liberal, and I think there's almost something about the politicised element of graffiti as well. Graffiti is now a platform to get political messages across.
Yeah.
You know, they're, and it has been in the past. You know, when we think about, I think historically, there has been very much right-wing and discriminatory graffiti that's been put up to offend people. But with the world, you know, and the majority of the population being quite liberal and very much left-viewing, I think there's been, you know, when we talk about the Justice for Grenfell, and we talk about, you know...
Free Palestine.
Free Palestine, Black Lives Matter, you know. Yeah. All of this stuff is now become a... the message can get across through the vehicle of graffiti.
Because protesting doesn't actually work as much as we like to think it does.
Yeah, that's one way why I think it's become more accessible.
Yeah.
And it's also the language around it as well. Mm. You know, if I was going to advertise a project to young people and I said you want to do a graffiti vandalism project or a train bombing project, chances are the parents ain't going to sign up to it. But if it's a street art culture project, you know, thinking about the words and how they land with people, that becomes something very different. And I don't know whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. I know there's people that hold on dearly and tightly to the ethos of what it means to be a writer and their views on people that don't adhere to the shoulds of you should not buy your paint, you should paint trains and so on.
Yeah,
fuck that, man. Enjoy yourself, whatever it means for you. I'm not saying don't do that. If you do that, my hat comes off to you, because, mate, it's a different world now. And if you're still out there doing that, mate, props. Yeah.
All day, yeah.
So I think there is a shift in paradigms now, and, you know, only the future can really tell us what that's going to be like. I'm not going to sit here and try and predict what might happen.
Does that make you nervous? Does it make you nervous? Does it make... No. When I think about...
It's a good thing.
You think so?
Yeah, man, of course.
But to people... I'm somebody... Right, actually, you know what? This is good. I've watched graph on a particular TV in my head.
Okay.
And that's a TV that I know as to be as true as I've made it. The racking, the brew raising, the trains, the live rail, what Kings and Toys said, what Steel Injection does, what Subway Art was, all these different components. Mm. And you marry them together and that's what's on my TV. What you're saying is, actually, fuck the TV. Get fucking rid of the TV. Is that what you're suggesting? And that maybe go 4D. Maybe go maybe look around behind the curtain, maybe see you in yourself?
Oh, I don't know. It's a controversial topic and it may not land well with some people. I think I'm not
saying
fuck that. I think, yeah, man, absolutely hold on to the roots of graffiti and where it comes from or what it's about, because that's what makes it golden, you know. But it's evolving and accept it's evolving. And
for sure.
Embrace that, ride the wave and make the most of it, you know. Because of the evolution of it, there's opportunities now. Mm. You know, people are making a living out of graffiti now.
Yeah, that's right.
People are, you know, when we think about your TV is a lovely metaphor for what I've been describing and the golden thread through all of this podcast around your TV is your map of the world for graffiti. You've got a map about what graffiti writers should be or should what graffiti is. But if we think about little Max who is down at that wall when he's growing up and his TV is being formed by
his mum voluntarily
take him to, you know, big up Chrome and Black on your jumper, take him to the graph shop, big up Urban Paint Supplies as well. My boy's down there, big up London Paint Supply as well. You know, big up all the places that are doing their thing. You know, they're not making some people are making a lot of money, some people aren't, but big it up providing those resources for everyone because they weren't about a while ago.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So I want to just put a plug in for them boys. Yeah, I'll pick up my free paint later. Safe.
Also, graffiti store.com in Birmingham. Man, international, man. All these different places. What for these guys, man?
So their model of the world is going to be different because they're going to grow up seeing graph as something that my mum or dad took me to do down the wall. I'm seeing all this political graffiti, or it's not even graffiti, it's street art. You know, it's something that now is seen as an activity or a hobby rather than something as vandalism and a crime. And because of that, because it becoming something that's almost a cultural enrichment activity rather than a release for what many of the people when they first got into it, and as many writers have described on this podcast, that, you know, it's a release for us. Mm. You know, it's becoming something different and people are learning to meet different needs from it. And the big question I have in my head when I reflect on this is, are those kids going to have the drive to want to paint trains? Are they going to want to be, you know, bombing the city and all of that? Or are they going to just be happy doing some art? And either of them's okay.
Stylistically?
As long as they enjoy themselves.
Right. Stylistically, do you think it progresses when the ground is flat, when the ground is levelled out? Because I often ask myself that. I often ask myself that, mainly from a consumeristic point of view, like that I can get any colour I want anywhere. We can get any paint we want anywhere. We can, within reason, there are places designated for it, and respect the boundaries, put your piece up. Within 2 hours, it'll be gone and replaced with another pit as long as you've got the picture. Mm. There's a lot of trends. And again, I agree with wholeheartedly that technology will run ahead without you. You fucking keep up with it because you will become, you will be stuck in a particular time, and you want to try and move with it. Whether it's just having your own Instagram picture post or whatever, but I just sometimes I think to myself, what will be the long standing? What's the outside of what we get best out of it and how we feel, which is important.
Do you know what it's about? I'm sitting here thinking as you're speaking. It's about ecology.
Ecology.
Okay. So ecology is everything else that's going on in your life, everything around you. Yeah.
Ooh, right. Yeah.
And that means the other elements of it. So why won't I go and break into loads of tube yards and paint tubes? Because I've got other things that are more important to me now.
Mm.
Yeah. And when we think about what we're doing, you know, there's this concept of self-sabotage that people talk about, and we're just moving away from graph just so slightly so I can get this point across. But when people don't achieve their goals, it's probably because there's an ecology violation, because by achieving that goal, you will lose out on a need that is already being met. Okay, so by not achieving your goals, you're meeting a need at some sort of level. So for me, you know, I've got a little girl now, you know, I've got a career. I've got, you know, I respect and value my freedom more than allegedly going to paint a train, you know? So there's something about your view on the risks that you're willing to take, because I'm slightly conscious that some of the way that I'm talking within this is I'm saying it's okay to let go of the old model of graph and, you know, what it's truly about and the core of it. And that's not what I'm saying.
It's about
being okay with not doing that and recognising that there's other things in life that are quite important as well.
For sure. And that's at its core, what we're talking about, for sure.
So I don't know if that answers the question.
Yeah, it does.
Right.
And I think as the world turns and we become at peace with ourselves and the way that we like to create will stop, that will ultimately make better artists.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. The evolution is good. You can't avoid it. You know, if we avoided evolution, we'd all still be running around clubbing each other. And do you know what I mean? Running around naked with big beards and being cavemen. Evolution is important.
Have you been spying on me when I'm back here?
Yeah, I know about you, Kevin.
But yeah, I agree with you.
So I think, yeah, you know, the future's bright. But, you know, the only thing about anything you look at, you know, just to close on this, I think just be aware of your attitude towards it. The only difference between a good day and a bad day is your attitude. The only difference between having a good life and a bad life is how you think about it, because what you think and the meanings that you make about anything you're doing is going to affect how you feel about it. And the quality of your life is dependent on the quality of your emotions. And we've already spoke about this. People in the world with nothing that are a hell of a lot more happier than some of the people are in this country.
Mm.
You know? So let's hold on to the golden nuggets. It's a bit of a paradox, really, and I don't know how you do both things, but let's really hold on to the ethos of where Graf came from and recognise and respect that, but equally recognise it's evolving and embrace that.
And on that note, can I just ask you, before we do sign out, I'm sure a lot of your peers, friends and close family friends are going to be watching. Are you always on deep? Is this always on? Do you think like this? Do you express this in a way? Because I'm fucking fascinated by you, my brother. And I'm just like, I'm in the short time I know you, I feel like I've learned so much in the course of an afternoon. And I'm thinking, has this always been how you've been? Even back in the day with the crew, with OSA, were you always the thinker? Were you always the analysis?
Maybe I did it privately. I don't think I was very vocal about it back then, but I think getting to middle age, whether I want to call it middle age or not, or growing up and realising that actually my time is limited, I think there came a point in my life when it was kind of time to try and understand myself a bit better, try and recognise that whatever trauma I experienced in childhood doesn't have to define me, and that I have a choice. And we could open up a whole other conversation, but essentially,
that's for part two.
Just be aware of your narratives, be aware of the story that you're telling yourself. The question was, am I always this deep? I don't know, man. You'd have to ask my friends.
Comments below, please. And like you say, that time is everything. It's a currency.
So again, the takeaways, man. Just be aware of how you're spending your time, because you're never going to get it back, man.
Thank you so much for spending time with us and the gang here.
No, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Fucking yawns in the house. Wow. And as a fan, you know what I mean? Growing up, seeing you guys do your thing. OSA was a really important time for me.
Cool.
Especially going up and down from fucking Crawley to Victoria then down to Kingston to see Vadim and then back up to Vancouver. It means a lot to have you on here and I really appreciate it.
It's been nice to kind of sit and reflect on that. Although we went various different places.
Fucking love it.
It's you know, if you said to that little boy that was sitting next to Matar, big up Matar, in that form tutor in that school, one day you'll be sitting there with Killer Keller doing a podcast about this, I'll say, fuck off.
Yeah, oh, blessings, everyone, my guy. Wow, I hope that gave you some enlightening thoughts and make you think on people, all right? Caring, you know what it do, sharing. Sharing is caring. Make sure you join the dots, tell a friend to tell a friend, all right? Jons, thank you so much, my brother.
No worries, thank you.
You stay lucky, people don't talk to anyone I fucking wouldn't, all right? Peace!